Welcome to Redacted on this Taco Tuesday. We spoiled something big, but because we had no sound the first time we started the show, you will not get that spoiler alert. So, hey, there's a couple of big World Cup games today.
You were just saved from that. Clayton, in the first run, gave it away, just told you the winner
of this game. Yeah, and I have no idea. I have no idea who won those games. So if you're watching later, I'm not going to ruin it for you this time. Sorry. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
If you could read lips, you know the winner of that game. I'm Natalie Morris.
Well, don't go bad. Don't ruin it for him. All right. On this show, our goal is to seek the truth wherever it takes us. We cover the stories the mainstream media will not cover. And we've got a very busy show for you on this Tuesday to get into. So we're going to talk about a couple of big stories out of Ukraine, a couple of course, around war crimes. The New York Times with an interesting report. We've got an update on this bombshell report from the New York Times this weekend. We're learning a lot more details about that. We're also going to have a deeper discussion about the nuclear angle on all of this.
Yes, why the International Atomic Energy Agency doesn't seem to be able to draw any conclusions about the shelling in Ukraine, but has lots of bandwidth for Iran. So yeah. That's interesting.
We're also going to talk about, hey, Dr. Fauci gave his final press conference today, his final COVID press conference. So we're going to bring you some of that. I can't believe what he said on his final day. But we're also going to look at a lot of college mandates. Why in the world are universities and colleges in the United States specifically pushing for booster mandates, vaccine mandates, as they head into the spring semester? Could it be part of the Biden administration's COVID emergency plan, which has been extended? Or is it part of a broader immunization agenda we're going to talk about?
Plus, some preliminary numbers seem to show that Sweden may have done the right thing when it came to lockdowns. Sweden is not dunking on this. They're not high-fiving. They never said, see, I told you so. So we're going to say it for them.
Yeah, that's right. And, hey, it's football season, right? It's World Cup. There's been a lot of chicanery that's been happening at the World Cup. And who's going to wear what? Are they going to wear rainbow armbands? Are they not going to wear rainbow armbands? There's a lot of politicking going on right now in Qatar. So we'll dive into all of that. So it's time to get uncomfortable. Welcome in, Rebels. Redacted starts right now. Welcome to Redacted on this Taco Tuesday. My brother-in-law made some delicious tacos today.
Carnitas tacos. Oh. They went to the butcher to pick up the turkey, and he couldn't resist himself and said, I'm going to make carnitas too. I would never take that on the week of Thanksgiving because there's just too much cooking and everything has to...
But he knows his stuff.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, he wanted some extra, so I'm so glad to have him in my life.
A lot of people saying, hey, you know, today is the, of course, the sad anniversary of the assassination of JFK. A lot of people in our Rumble chat, I've got our Rumble board right up here, talking about the Oliver Stone, the second part of it, I still haven't seen the first part of it, which is the revisiting JFK documentary, JFK Revisited. And so, yeah, I think there's a part two that's supposed to be coming out. So a lot of people are talking about that. No, football is, people said, are you Russians for calling it football?
No.
F-U-T-B-O-L. No, that's...
But we live in Portugal and yeah. There's football, Fatima, and what is the... Fado. Are important things here, so... We call it football.
All right. So we do have a daily newsletter. I would love for all of you to subscribe. If you go to redacted.inc, redacted.inc is the place to go. It's a website, and you'll be confronted with two options when you go to that website. Not .com, it's .inc. And on the left side of your screen, you'll click the sign up for newsletter option. Did you hear that little sound effect, little popping sound effect? That's what happens when you go there. You click on the left side of your screen, sign up for our newsletter, boom, and then... you will be subscribed. You put in your email address, you hit submit, and then you'll receive a welcome email. Now, it's so important, you must confirm that you want to receive it. So you'll receive an email to your Gmail. You just got to go into your spam folder somewhere else and click on that you want to receive the email. Click here to verify it, and then you'll receive it tomorrow morning. Now, we cover a few stories every morning in five or six stories that we cover and you can read them over your cup of tea, your cup of coffee first thing in the morning. And that's a very important place, because last week when we were suspended on YouTube and banned once again, we were able to communicate with all of you on our newsletter that, hey, we're over at Rumble, streaming exclusively. So that's very important. That's how we're able to connect with you, because God knows the big tech gods won't allow us to communicate on a regular basis. So anyway, anything to say about that? Mm. Any thoughts?
No.
No? Anybody else?
Go.
Anybody else?
No.
Anybody else? Oh, yeah. Up here on the big redacted screen, when you sign up, when you become a channel subscriber, your name will pop up here on the big screen. So please do it, and we'll welcome you if we see it pop up there in our background.
Yeah, it shows subs, it shows members, and it shows super chats.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, we'll have some super chats a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
All right, can I take a little sip of tea?
Sure. Yeah, I'll have some seltzer.
Okay. Just wet your whistle.
I had some raw milk.
Raw milk?
Raw milk, okay.
That's perfect for speaking.
Are you
like,
nursing?
It's like the worst thing you could possibly... Why don't you just have like a cupcake? Or like... or like
it's like...
Ugh.
Okay.
Yeah, raw milk.
I have a bar of butter here I'm going to eat later.
Yeah. Why don't you eat a bag of cotton next?
It's not buttermilk.
All right, let's get into it. Our top story tonight, let's talk about what's going on in the Ukrainian war. The United States and UK are now pushing for more offensive weapons to Ukraine rather than just those defensive weapons, which is great because we need more offensive stuff from the United States and from NATO partners. We really were getting upset that you guys were not sending enough billions of dollars in weapons into Ukraine. So, yes.
Is it also because they have shown that they're responsible with weaponry and keep it inside their playroom?
No. They scatter it all over the place. Like, when they start playing with their weapons, they do not keep it in the playroom.
Okay.
It continues to go to other locations.
Oh.
So, we'll have more on that in a minute. We're going to hear from General Mark Milley. But something is changing. The Western media is starting to change their tune over Ukraine. You might have noticed this over the past couple of weeks. Maybe it was, I don't know, pre or post election, maybe post midterms. I don't know. Something kind of switched in the mainstream media. Overnight, the Associated Press has fired the reporter who told us who told the world that Russia had fired a missile into Poland. This was the original Associated Press report, and it would have sparked World War III. So let me read this. And we now know, of course, that Ukraine fired that missile that killed two people. So here is the Associated Press story. Three officials told the AP that preliminary assessments indicate the missile that struck Poland had been fired by Ukrainian forces at an incoming Russian missile. Okay. So that was the original.
And
that,
yes, I remember it, which caused WW3 to trend online,
yeah,
and everyone to surmise that that meant that Russia was attacking inside of NATO borders and that NATO would respond in kind and that hell would rain down on us all. It turned out to not be the case at all. And even the Biden administration quickly came out and said, we don't think that that's the case. So why did the Associated Press use that as a push alert to all of their phones?
Right.
All over Twitter. Why did that happen? Who was the U.S. official?
And then Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, of course, then took that as an opportunity to go to, you know, post on social media that he thought that this was a provocation and we need to retaliate. Watch.
What we warned about a long time ago happened today. We've been saying this. Terror is not limited to our national borders. It's already spread to the territory of Moldova. And today, Russian missiles hit Poland, the territory of a friendly country. To fire missiles at NATO territory, this is a Russian missile attack on collective security. This is a very significant escalation. We must act.
So what's amazing about that, of course, he knew. And the United States had warned him that that wasn't true.
Yes.
So you see as an opportunity to continue to go forth with that, right? So then the retraction. So then the Associated Press came out with a retraction of sorts. The new assessment contradicts information earlier Tuesday from a senior U.S. intelligence official who told the AP that Russian missiles crossed into Poland. Oh, so they just made a little correction. No, nothing to see here. No war. And I think they were surprised. I think the Associated Press, which of course has been a mouthpiece of the intelligence state, has been for since this entire beginning of this entire war has been pushing out propaganda. And I think maybe they were surprised at the pushback that they were getting actually from people inside the Biden administration.
You think? I mean, I saw that most of the pressure was either from sort of the right or online, people who were like, this is extremely irresponsible. I don't know. They've been able to get away with so many half-truths and so many refracted truths that I feel like they're surprised just that anyone was paying attention.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, oh, we've got to be getting away with this for now since February. With all sorts of stories. Hey, we're the Associated Press. We're reporting on things here in Ukraine, and we don't even have reporters in the towns where we're writing the stories from. Like, that's been verified.
But
like,
there's so much that's not passing the smell test here, because they doubled down on this. It was a senior U.S. official, but giving us no names on... Of course, they're not going to give us names, but any kind of how did this get wrong? How did we get this wrong?
Well, the Associated Press has standards. I don't know if you know this, and we'll get into some of these sources here in a second, because that's an interesting part of this. So the Associated Press has, they have their own rule book. You can take a look here on your screen. This is the Associated Press Statement of News, Values, and Principles. For more than 170 years, the people of the Associated Press have had the privilege of bringing news and information to the world. We have gone to great lengths, overcome great obstacles, and too often have made great sacrifices to ensure that the news was reported quickly, accurately, and honestly. So that's the preamble. And then if you take a closer look down on their standards page, we abhor inaccuracies, carelessness, bias, or distortions. Oh, really? You abhor it?
Well, at least they're not using the Oxford comma, because that is against AP style. So it's consistent.
We always strive to identify all the sources of our information, the second paragraph. We shield them from anonymity only when they insist upon it for a valid reason and when they provide vital information, not opinion or speculation. There is no other way to obtain that information, and when we are confident the source is reliable and in a position to know, we don't plagiarize and we respect copyright.
Okay. That gives me an idea for a content analysis then, because I do feel like during this specific conflict, many Western outlets are taking the liberty with unnamed sources. And I think it's more than in most conflicts. I feel like that. And I would like to do a content analysis to see if I'm right or not. So any J school students out there right now, or sociologists who want to do analysis of this war coverage, there's a good project. Are they using more anonymous sources in this war than ever before? I feel like that's true.
I think absolutely that's the case. And here's what they say about anonymous sources, according to the Associated Press, in their guidelines. Reporters who intend to use material from anonymous sources must get approval from their news manager before sending the story to the desk. The manager is responsible for vetting the material, making sure it meets AP guidelines. The manager must know the identity of the source and is obligated, like the reporter, to keep the source's identity confidential. Only after they are assured that the source material has been vetted by a manager should editors and producers allow it to be used. So, these sources have to be verified by the manager at the Associated Press? Be curious to find out then if that's the case. Three high-ranking U.S. military officials anonymously confirmed this story?
And were then, according to this protocol, approved by management to publish push all over Twitter?
Well, does that include the line, some people say? You know what I mean? They use that line, some people have said,
no.
Or this has said, like, those wouldn't be anonymous sources, but they use that language sometimes, too.
Yes. Or experts say, but no, that
right.
This is different.
People on the ground have said, or
we're talking about an information that is attributed to somebody or a quote.
Right. I mean, it's crazy though. So, will this manager get fired? And maybe perhaps we can actually, get verification from this manager as to who these sources were. I think it's a total fabrication. I think it's garbage. If anything, this shows that one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing inside Washington, and as the Associated Press, of course, is a mouthpiece for the intelligence state. The intelligence state floats stories to them, and then, of course, they put them right inside the Associated Press. So now that AP reporter is falling on the sword for the intelligence state, so we learn from the AP that they have now fired that reporter who claimed the missile hit Poland. So that reporter has been fired. Really? But what about the manager who approved these anonymous sources and who nearly got us into World War III? I mean, literally, think about the end of the world. And this is like the news story that could have led to massive nuclear annihilation.
Yeah, but it would have been more like a Three's Company episode because it was all a misunderstanding.
Right. Like, oh, whoops, Mr. Furley, he was the one that rang the doorbell. So
but they dismissed the reporter. But like, what about Zelensky? Like, what about all the propaganda coming from Ukraine? Like, you know what I mean? Like those they heard it coming from straight from him, too. So,
right. Well,
was he getting fired?
And was he just going off of this? Was he just like literally going off of the reports from? So here is the
I mean, that's unacceptable because he's the leader of a military as the president of a country. So, he needs to at least show some competence to show us that he's in charge in his own military.
So here he is. This is James LaPorta. He's the national security reporter who was quoting an unnamed senior U.S. intelligence official. I would love to hear from him. James, now that you're fired, maybe you can speak freely. Would you like to come on Redacted and tell us the story?
Tell us who that redacted source is.
I would love to know that redacted source because you got thrown under the bus for it. Because I don't believe for a second. I mean, I think the people that work at these news organizations largely are just being fed stories. Here's a source. You need to run with this. You need to publish a story on this. I don't think that he has. I mean, certainly not the. You don't work for these news organizations and have autonomy. You go to work at a place like You go to work at a place like the Gray Zone, or Redacted, where no one's telling you what to say. Yeah. You can say what you report. You can find what you from your reporting, and you can report it. So, hey, we'd love to talk with you, James. I think it would be great. I'd love to have him on the show.
Well, I think it's also, like, think about, like, how fast that news happened. Like, how fast we got that information. Like, there was people just on the ground immediately. It's almost like I don't know if you remember the story during 9/11 where it's like they found the passports, like, instantly in all the rubble. You know what I mean? It's like right. That kind of thing. It's like, how do you get that information that quickly?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. So again, waiting on that to find out if he'll talk to us. Meanwhile, we're learning a lot more now about the gruesome war crimes that have been detailed by the New York Times. So we have this reversal by the Associated Press. And now we have this big bombshell report from the New York Times. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. This was a remarkable moment. Something is changing, I think, in the Western media. The New York Times over the weekend releasing the massive report showing the brutal murders of Russian prisoners of war. Now, we're not going to show you any of the video, but this is just a still image from the New York Times piece, which you can read fully on their website. And so in this photo, there's no one dead yet, sadly. They were told to lie face down, and they were shot. We won't show you the video. You can seek it out if you want to, but it's awful, and it is a war crime by all accounts. And the New York Times confirmed the video is real. Let me repeat. The New York Times authenticated the video. Imagine that happening back in February or March of this year, where the New York Times would have authenticated that Russian POWs were shot in a war crime? It's a pretty big moment, and it explains a lot.
Yeah.
Firstly,
well, this is what they're saying Russia has been doing. Like this, if you watch the propaganda that comes out of the Ukraine, this is what they are accusing Russia of doing the entire time, and we've not seen any evidence of Russia doing anything even close to this, other than trying to avoid casualties at all costs.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them, and the Associated Press has been complicit in this as well. So this is why this is like a sea change moment, maybe? Maybe I'm just being hopeful here.
Well, I was thinking about it because in the same week that CBS News releases this Hunter Biden laptop confirmation,
right,
and the whole internet is like, way to catch up. You are about 2 years late on that.
Right, right.
In the same week that CNN has record low ratings, in the same week that, CBS News goes off Twitter and then comes back, I think that there's this, now the media is like, why do they hate us? One, because you don't tell us the truth.
Right.
You know, you hold stories that you feel like are unfavorable to your pre-existing narrative. And maybe it's time to stop that. And it feels like for the first time, the New York Times was like, we don't like reporting this, but we're going to have to.
Yeah. Like, all right, I guess we have to do our jobs, you know?
Yeah.
That's why.
You're not supposed to like the things that you report on as a reporter, unless you like review spa treatments or whatever. But for the most part, you should not have. I was thinking about this today because I'm like, most of this stuff I would never have allowed myself to entertain if we had not been doing so much research for the show. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't have a pre-existing bias other than peace. But you have to look these things in the eye in order to advocate for them to stop. You have to know what's going on.
Well, and they wouldn't know what's going on because they've been kept from knowing what's going on. That's part of the problem. Firstly, I mean, it explains why Ukraine hasn't wanted Western media near the front and the front battle lines. Remember when we showed you the video of CNN, the CNN anchor reporter in the field in Ukraine admitting that the Ukrainian government has been keeping them from the front lines to avoid seeing, like, they're basically like, yeah, they keep us far away from there. Why? Well, so you're only allowed to report from Kiev in a hotel and act like you're actually in the front lines and you're not? So that's garbage. What happened to actual war correspondents? We're not allowed to see it because you don't want us to see what's actually happening. We don't want to see what's being caught on camera. So that's when CNN actually tried to share that with us. What are they trying to hide? So now I'm going to quote from the New York Times. I almost grabbed your glasses. I wonder how that would have worked.
Don't stretch them.
So let me quote from the New York Times piece now. So this is the New York Times. These are not my words. This is the New York Times. A series of videos that surfaced on social media last week has ignited a debate over whether Ukrainian forces committed war crimes or acted in self-defense as they tried to capture a group of Russian soldiers who were then killed. The video shows the grisly before and after scenes of the encounter earlier this month, in which at least 11 Russians, most of whom are seen lying on the ground, appear to have been shot at close range, one after the other, of their fellow fighters suddenly opened fire on Ukrainian soldiers standing nearby. The videos detailed below, and whose authenticity has been verified by the New York Times, offer a rare look into one gruesome moment among many in the war, but do not show how or why the Russian soldiers were killed. Ultimately, they leave a mystery that has been used by both sides on the online battle for hearts and minds. The videos were first circulated by Ukrainian news and social media channels. They were using them to laud their military prowess of their armed forces and publicize their heroic taking of territory lost to Russia early in the war. Now, very important, as Wyatt Reed pointed out, journalist Wyatt Reed, who we had here on the show, he said the only army right now that's been actively filming these types of things has been the Ukrainian army.
Yes.
And they wind up on Ukrainian Telegram channels. So here you have this video of this, and it's astonishing and terrible. You know, it's awful. We're learning more, though, about these war criminals involved in these in this act. The Ukrainian border
what
guards.
What really gets me? Sorry, I was going to say what really gets me is that they try to spin it as self, like when they say self-defense, like these people had their hands tied behind their back. Like there's no argument you could make for that whatsoever if you look at the video.
Well, I didn't see in this video, to be clear, I just want to be 100% clear. From what I can see, I don't see any hands tied behind backs. I see them laying, they're being told to lay down on their knees and their hands above their heads. So you might be seeing a different video. And maybe they are in a different video that you've seen. But from what I can tell from the videos I've seen from the New York Times, in these videos, their hands were not held behind their back. In other videos, you're right, that we showed on the show. And then, of course, we were blocked for showing them. We were demonetized for showing them. There were hands tied behind the back. So just to be clear on that point, but yes.
Yeah.
So we are learning more about these war criminals who were involved in this horrific act. The Ukrainian border guards who shot the prisoners were identified as Arthur Bordnichuk and Mikhailovsky Nazar. Those are the Ukrainians. But who else was there that day? Well, we learned this morning that an American soldier was involved during this execution time. An American soldier was there on the Ukrainian side. According to the Telegram channel Track a Mercenary, U.S. infantry veteran Chris Naganuma from Arvada, Colorado, am I saying that right? Arvada, Colorado, was present in the videos. He was there and confirmed. Now, this has been confirmed by the Gateway Pundit. This has been confirmed by Track a Mercenary, which tracks mercenaries. Can you believe that? Like, we have literally, because we need to find out who all these people that are going into Ukraine and actually getting paid to fight in Ukraine. And who's footing the bill for this, by the way? I saw a super chat just come in a minute ago. Let me ask that. It's like, how are we in the West? Denise says, how are we as Americans supposed to assist funding a war abroad while we're being invaded by criminals with fentanyl in the United States coming across our borders?
That's ordained by the FDA. I mean, they don't want to fight it.
Yeah. Your tax dollars going to mercenaries in Ukraine. We already know, we've already shown you how your tax dollars are also going to fund Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters who are coming into Ukraine. That's been confirmed.
Well, and you contractors. We showed videos before where it was Americans clearly walking through there saying we're here to kill some Russians. Like they were saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed that that's what they just did.
But that was applauded on social media early on. I don't think that at least Twitter has the same, you know, social media has the same appetite for people saying that kind of thing now. But that doesn't mean they're not there doing it.
So this is Chris Naganuma, who is there. Here he is wearing his, I guess, night scope stuff. And then here he is with the Ukrainian. He's there laughing with them. I don't know if you have this other one there. There he's laughing with them. I'm in the field there. 8 days ago, Chris Naganuma from Arvada, Colorado, according to Trackamerc Online, U.S. arrived in Ukraine. He came to visit U.S. mercenary team called FOG, Task Force 31, and is now there as a combat journalist. Naganuma is an ex-U.S. infantry and is currently taking pictures and training with the U.S. mercenary team.
Okay.
Really, he's a journalist. So then clearly, I have some questions. I bet he's got a lot of videos of this then. If he was there taking photos and he was involved in this, he was categorizing, or he was cataloging all of this.
For posterity.
Yeah. So your Ukrainian buddies that you were hanging out with that were doing this, if you're a journalist, then share the videos. Like, we'd love to see this and see the information, see what actually happened and unfolded. Now, no one's claiming that he had anything to do with the horrific war crime here, but he was there, right, according to these reports. So if he is, we'd love to see the videos. Here he is.
I was going to say really quick, people have been busted with these, like these mercenaries and stuff have these private groups, these like their own little social media groups where they share like, you know, pictures of people they've hurt and all this other stuff. And some of that stuff ends up leaking. And I wonder how much of that is what we're actually getting. It's like they're trying to share it with their buddies, but somebody's sharing it outside of that.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, who knows, right? Again, this is the fog of war. Where do these videos actually come from? Who posted these to a Telegram channel? I've seen hundreds of these types of videos, similar types of videos like this posted on Ukrainian Telegram channels. So this is not surprising at all that this stuff leaks
out.
Well,
New York Times is saying that it was circulated in Ukrainian news. So that gives it further validation if Ukraine feels like they had nothing to hide by showing them that it was so totally fine that they could put it on their nightly news.
I wonder now if the New York Times will do a follow-up and dive deeper into this angle that has been found by Trackamerc Online and also by Gateway Pundit about this American journalist who was there. Like, I'd love for the New York Times to do a follow-up on this story. They're the ones that broke the story.
It'd be nice to see them finally do journalism for once.
They broke the story. Yeah, maybe they should follow up on it. Yeah, here he is. Here's his Facebook page. Here's Sanctus Andreas, U.S. mercenary involved in the latest Ukrainian war crime, identified by Trackamerc. 8 days ago, Chris Naganuma from Arvada, Colorado, arrived in Ukraine. He's an ex-UF infantry and is currently taking pictures. Okay, so you can take that off the screen now. And then here is his Facebook page that they found as well. This was on Gateway Pundit as well. So now the United Nations is asking Ukraine to investigate, but Russia asked the United Nations to do its own investigation for obvious reasons. They're also asking the Council of Europe, the International Committee of the Red Cross, and Amnesty International, which has already independently verified that the Ukrainian army is guilty of violating international war treaties. They published a report on that, then had to kind of retract it or walk it back and backpedal it. So will anything come of this one? It's a good question. Under the Prisoners of War, Article 13 in United Nations Human Rights, prisoners of war must at all times be humanely treated, according to the United Nations. Any unlawful act or omission by detaining power, causing death, or seriously endangering the health of a prisoner of war in his custody is prohibited and will be regarded as a serious breach of the present convention. In particular, no prisoner of war may be subjected to physical mutilation or to medical or scientific experiments of any kind which are not justified by the medical, dental, or hospital treatments of the prisoner concerned and carried out in his interest. Otherwise, it's a war crime. Oh, so you mean like laying them down and shooting them? That's not part of taking care of them. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak then visited Ukraine over the weekend, left the G20, and pledged another $50 million in additional aid. Oh, pounds. Yeah, I keep forgetting. Pounds, baby, pounds. This happened, and even though the UK National Crime Agency's director, General Graham Bigger, told the Sunday Times that weapons sent to Ukraine could be trafficked out of Ukraine and end up in the hands of criminals and terrorists. And someone in our chat earlier said, yes, 75% of these weapons, we can't track them. We don't know. So General Mark Milley, though, is not moved by that. He doesn't care where these weapons go. We're about to send a whole lot more offensive weapons. Watch.
The United States are determined to continue to support Ukraine with the means to defend themselves for as long as it takes. We will continue to support Ukraine for as long as it takes, and we will continue to support them as long as it takes. And until then, we will continue to support all the way for as long as it takes. We will be there for as long as it takes.
We'll be there forever.
Wait, we will be there. Thought we weren't there.
Yeah, I guess you let the cat out of the bag. I don't know. So meanwhile, speaking of money laundering, a judge ruled today that he's going to keep the names redacted of the top 50 creditors to FTX. Here's Zelensky getting his big new bucket of money because the United States just announcing an additional tranche of $4.7 billion. So he's going to get some additional money just in time for the holidays from you, the taxpayers, to continue this little charade. And then, of course, money laundering. The judge ruled today that he's going to keep the names redacted of the top 50 creditors to FTX. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried's little operation that was laundering money. Then the Democratic scheme that was shoveling billions of dollars through the Ukrainian crypto exchange, or through the crypto exchange, and then back to the Democratic Party. Here's how it worked. Here's the good little nice diagram here in case you're wondering how that all worked. So Zero Hedge reporting this afternoon, a lawyer on behalf of a major FTX creditors made an appearance suddenly. And I want more on this story. I'm sorry. I want more on this story. He walked in front of the judge and he says he represents a significant number of customers who are likely to be on the top 50 creditor list for FTX. Well, that's interesting, as Zero Hedge reports. So a lawyer walks in and says, you don't release these names.
Yeah, I am interested too. And I would like to cross-reference those with the Epstein list that we talked about yesterday.
Exactly.
That is insane.
Insane.
And the Epstein case that we talked about yesterday was filed in 2017.
Right.
And so we're now getting it a whole 5 years later. So I do not want to wait 5 years to get this information.
No, we'll wait 75 years. We will. And then
we
finally
haven't gotten it yet. So we can't really, say we got it.
The list or the, yeah. And then finally, just get you out of here on this point, on this story, U.S. senators today have been urging President Biden to start providing Ukraine with Gray Eagle unmanned aerial vehicles that could turn the tide of the war in favor of Ukraine. So more offensive weapons coming from both the UK and the United States. Forget defensive. We're going on the offensive now. That's the move. That's the weapons you'll be sending to Ukraine. Love to hear your thoughts on this story. Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat. If you subscribe to the channel, your name will pop up here on the big telly behind us. We've got more news to get to on this Tuesday. We're going to look at the nuclear investigation.
Can I just say really quick, what a beautiful origin story, like Zelensky, that failing, struggling comedian to billionaire dictator in how long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what a story.
Sean Penn should make a movie about it and Ben Stiller should play the character. Wouldn't that be a great idea?
Wherever did you come up with that?
Just a good idea. Hey, we got more news. We're going to talk about the nuclear investigation because that angle President Putin has been fired up about, wondering when the hell are they going to investigate the continued shelling of the nuclear plant. We're going to talk about colleges still mandating the vaccine. Why are they pushing for this into the spring? Like, what in the world is going on? By the way, and we're going to hear from Dr. Fauci. You do not want to miss this. He gave his final press conference today. We're going to play you that sound because it's unbelievable. And we're going to talk about Sweden vindicated over the lockdowns. But first,
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Ghostbed. Now, there is nothing better than a great night of sleep, and sleeping on a mattress that is designed for your particular sleeping style can really help. That's why we are excited to bring you a partnership with Ghostbed. Ghostbed is a family-owned business that's been designing mattresses and other sleep products for more than 2 decades, so they know that sleep is personal and mattress shopping can be overwhelming. Ghostbed takes the guesswork out of the equation with their online mattress quiz. You just answer a few questions about your lifestyle and sleeping style, and they'll recommend the right ghost bed mattress for you. You'll get a 101 night sleep trial and free returns for added peace of mind, and shipping is fast and free. Plus, all ghost bed mattresses are proudly made in the USA. With Black Friday coming up, you can get a ton of great deals at ghostbed.com. Our listeners get 30% off ghost bed mattresses, plus 2 free luxury pillows, and get their cooling weighted blanket for free when you spend $1,500 or more. So use promo code REDACTED at ghostbed.com/redacted to take advantage of this offer. That's ghostbed.com/redacted. Use promo code REDACTED.
Aless Kumar says, I hate commercials. Hey, Aless, you know what? We couldn't do this show without the support of our sponsors. And we only allow sponsors on our show that we believe in and who do a good job. So thank you for supporting. Like if you're looking for a new bed, then you can support our show and support independent journalism. We don't take any money from Big Pharma. So nothing from Pfizer, Moderna, like all of the other billionaires out there. Hey, someone just asked, where are you guys broadcasting from? We are in Portugal. If you'd like to subscribe, your name will pop up here. Andrew Otterson.
D in the chat says, those mattresses are amazing. So thank you for using Ghostbed.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for supporting our show.
All right, we're going to tell you about nuclear in a second, but can you turn back on the Rumble chat, please?
Yeah.
Our Rumble users, we do not want to neglect, and the chat went to sleep. So give us a second because we want to hear from you.
All right.
Okay.
Good. We're up and running now. Okay.
Okay. Well, Russia has condemned the United Nations for refusing to investigate who the heck is shelling the Zaporizhia power plant. Russia has called on the International Atomic Agency, International Atomic Energy Agency, to investigate this shelling in the region, but their response is no can do. I think it's worth noting before we go on in this story, all of these investigations that we Westerners do not get, given how much the mainstream media wants us all to hate Russia and embrace Ukraine, we should be wary when we get non-committal answers to questions like, who's shelling the power plant in Zaporizhia? I can think of a couple other questions. Who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline?
Good question.
We know exactly that there was bomb fragments. Who put them there?
Massive residue from explosions.
Who accidentally launched a missile into Poland? Who is committing war crimes and executing soldiers on camera? Who are these things? When the answer might be Russia, well, the media screams about it. But when it's clear that it's not Russia, and there may be some doubt that maybe would dampen our support for Ukraine, we get this head in the sand syndrome. So what's going on here, right?
Is that me in the head? It looks like me with my
head. It does kind of look like
it
you.
Does.
No, the one it's on just the left. A graphic.
The one on the left.
But this does very much feel like when we ask questions like this, it's like, no, we told you it happened. You should just be happy with that. Do you want to investigate?
No, we'll just stick our head in the sands.
But I can see Russia from my house. That's the Tina Fey line,
well,
right?
I want to say White Lightning 777 sent a super chat that says, I just researched S-300. If it misses the target in midair, it's supposed to self-destruct. Multiple sources confirm this.
What is the
S-300, of course, is the missile that hit Poland.
That's the missile.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting. I've seen a couple of different interesting takes on that in the chat. So thank you for that. Now back to the shelling of the nuclear plant in Zaporizhia. Russia says that it has sent information to the IAEA about these attacks, including photos and videos, because you recall in around August time this summer, the IAEA said, we're going to go to Zaporizhia. This seems dangerous. We're going to go see what's going on there. They went, they shook some hands, and they said, thanks, this should stop. We don't like it. And then they left. You know, they never told us who was doing it. They said they weren't in a position to do so. But they just continued to condemn the attacks. Russia continues to document these attacks. And the IAEA did actually leave people behind to continue to monitor the situation. But it seems that all they are doing is monitoring whether or not it's volatile. And they continue to say that it's volatile. But, you know, are they collecting this proof that Russia is sending to them? Are they going to follow up on that? If they feel like they can't do that, who should we ask? We should all want a straight answer on this, no matter who you support in this conflict. Now, Russia said this in a statement. This was, according to Russian statement, an official government document, but I did push translate on it. So this is the translation from that site itself.
So,
yes, from this spokesperson, saying, we are convinced that in such an unprecedented circumstances, the top directors at the IAEA Secretariat must take a responsible action. This is Russia saying this. As an authoritative and independent international body, it should stop denouncing the shelling of the plant and stop demanding it be stopped without naming the responsible party. It should clearly say who it is to blame for these attacks. It's time to call a spade, otherwise it is impossible to stop this happening. This requires determination and responsibility. We hope these qualities will be displayed. So, you know, like when your kids are fighting in the back, you have to say who's hitting who to make them stop it, right? You can't just yell out, nobody in the car hit each other. If you know who's hitting, make them stop it.
Well, that's kind of how I handle it, though. I kind of like, I don't care who it is, just shut up back there. Don't make Daddy turn this car around.
That's why it's not effective. They don't hear you because you have to be nasty and say stop it to whoever is doing it.
Or just slam the brakes.
Yeah.
And they'll know I'm serious. And their eyes will be like, what? What? Daddy's serious now. Really, I'm going to pull this thing over and we get some answers.
So, interesting question. You might think to yourself, self, maybe the IAEA is not capable of this. Maybe they're just kind of, you know, nuclear janitors. Like if something happens, they can go and clean it up.
Or
hall pass monitors. Like they could say, get back to class. Don't do this. When officials from this agency, though, visited, you know, they said, we can't really tell you, you know, who's doing this. We just think it's dangerous, which we sent them there because we all knew that it was dangerous, right? That's why all nation states agreed that they should go. They did release a statement on their website today saying, we've looked this stuff over. We think that everything there is pretty okay for now. There's, you know, there was some like residue, but seems okay. We're not too worried as you were. Remember that in this summer, when the general inspector went to the Zaporizhzhia power plant, said that he was going to delay his holiday with his family because this was important. So he went and no conclusion. When Christian Amanpour asked him, why can't you tell us who's doing this? This was his response.
And let me just ask you out and out, is it safe? Do we risk a threat of any meltdown or radiation leak or such thing right now?
Thank you very much. Good to be with you again. The situation is very worrying, continues to be very worrying. I was there, as you said, last week. I returned, and the shelling continues. So we are still facing a very grave danger. In your question, there were a number of things you mentioned in terms of a meltdown. I doubt it. But the mere fact that there is a continuity of attacks and shelling, deliberate or not, wittingly or unwittingly, people are hitting a nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe. So I must say that the danger continues.
So when you say people are hitting, can you make a determination as to who is hitting?
I cannot make that determination. We don't have the means to do that. You would need to be looking or monitoring the military operation in the region in all its vastness. which is not only beyond the mandate of the IAEA, but would require enormous capabilities. What we know, and that is my responsibility, is to look at the safety and the security of the facility to determine what is really going on. And this is why my visit there, the inspection there, and the fact that now...
Okay, all he did was say that this is dangerous for like 3 minutes. But then he did contradict himself and said, my job is to make sure that it's safe and that it stops. But you're not doing any of that. You're just watching and telling us that it's safe. I mean, I'm here in Portugal and I'm watching and telling you that it's not safe. Like, I just did your job. So how about you go and figure out who's doing it and make it stop? You know, when he says we don't have the personnel for that, we don't have, like, we're not trained at that, we can't really monitor military operation. That's so interesting that they don't have the bandwidth for it, because guess what they really, really do have a lot of bandwidth for is Iran. Just today, or just this week, they announced a whole round of new censures for Iran because they say that Iran is not sufficiently cooperating with the Board of Governors. So they have all the time in the world to get into Iran, investigate and investigate and investigate. And when Iran says, we let them in, we showed them what they wanted to see, and they said, not enough. We want more time there. We want more investigations. And so Iran turned around and said, well, then, we're going to keep enriching uranium, and we're going to do it the way we want because your demands are unreasonable. Iran is enriching uranium for nuclear power plants. They are enriching uranium well below the 90% purity required for a weapon. Right now, they say they are at a 60% purity. We know this because state media said so. They are not hiding it. But they are being censured because they do not want to cooperate with the IAEA. So in response, they decided, well, you know, we can't abide by these rules, then we're going to do what we want. Now, is Iran doing something nefarious? We don't know, but we also don't know a lot from the IAEA, so we can't really take their word for it. In Iran, the plants were attacked in April. They say it was Israel that did so. The IAEA is, again, not really that interested in who did it. They did not really look into it, but they'll look into exactly what Iran is up to and cause problems if they don't get an all-access pass. But in Zaporizhia, all they want to do is condemn, and then not much else. So the IAEA cannot be neutral, clearly.
Clearly. Clearly, clearly, clearly. Well, we've got more news to get to here.
I think I could... I was going to say, I think I could back up all these rules if there wasn't one country that breaks them on a daily basis that nobody holds them accountable for everything or anything, right? The United States. So no, it's like we should not be able to tell another country, like they should be able to do at least what we're doing.
No, people in the chat are saying, no, they're just doing the U.S.'s bidding. The IAEA, they're just mouthpieces.
Well, the IAEA is connected to the United Nations.
Of course.
And so the United Nations, yes, is an arm piece of the West with the U.S. as its ringleader. So that's why, you know, condemn Ukraine, condemn Israel, cannot do it.
Cannot do it. We can't possibly do it. But we've got more news to get to here on this Tuesday. Someone in our Rumble chat, Rob R-A-F, I don't know if that's Royal Air Force, Rob Royal Air Force, or just Rob R-A-F, says, redacted are idiots or do not understand what they read. 3 exclamation marks. The original report says that Ukraine fired the missile. 3 exclamation points. No, it didn't, Rob. The correction went back and changed the original story. And so here they've corrected and updated it. So the original AP story, Rob, so we're not idiots, just to be clear. I mean, sometimes we're idiots, but maybe you can take it back. In earlier versions of a story published November 15th, the Associated Press reported erroneously, based on information from a senior American intelligence official who spoke on the condition of anonymity, that Russian missiles had crossed into Poland and killed 2 people. So, Rob, just check your reading skills, okay? Before you lob some insults, before you're lobbing missiles.
Does Rob work for the Biden administration?
I don't know. Rob, do you work for the Biden administration?
Although the Biden administration was one of the first to say that's not what the data shows.
Even the Pentagon.
We can't even...
One of the first confirmations that this was not from Russia was from the Pentagon.
Yeah.
They couldn't confirm it. So like the AP ran with it. All of these news publications were all over it, like stink on a monkey.
Yeah.
And good.
So that was unnecessary. I didn't need to have said that about the Biden administration. I take that jab back. It was an unforced error, as we call in this house, when you hit at somebody, like you don't need to have taken that shot, and you do. It's unprovoked. That was an unforced error. I take it back.
The Philadelphia in me comes out when, you knock him down. Now why don't you try knocking me down? You make a comment like that. All right, we've got more news to get to on this Tuesday. That's my Rocky Balboa. Yeah, we've got more news. We're going to talk about these colleges still mandating the vaccine, which is crazy, heading into the spring. Like, what the hell? Really, at this point? And we're going to hear from Dr. Fauci, because today was his final press conference. For his COVID press conference going into the holidays. He's taking the time off. He's quitting. He's done now for good. And we're going to talk about some woke football as well.
All right. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at COVID Tax Relief. Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic. And now doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDTaxRelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with two or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. This program is complicated, but nobody knows about it more than the CPAs and taxpayers, tax experts over at COVIDTaxRelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash that they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had an increase in sales. Again, you did the tough thing during COVID. You kept your business open, so let COVIDTaxRelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. It's worth a shot. Visit COVIDTaxRelief.org. That's COVIDTaxRelief.org.
All right,
this is on you. This next one.
Yeah, so I got a question for you. Raise your hand if you have an answer for me. Like, why in the hell are colleges and universities in the United States still mandating vaccines for the spring semester? Or you won't be allowed to attend. Does anyone have an answer for me on that question?
Because the vaccine, I don't even want to repeat the.
You have no idea?
If I repeated the, because the vaccine prevents the spread, because I don't know.
I don't know. I have no idea why colleges and universities in the United States are still mandating vaccines for the spring semester. It really makes no sense at this point. I mean, for young people, right? I could understand maybe if it was for universities where you had people with comorbidities, like it was called Comorbidity University. Like, and those are the only people that were allowed to attend that university, right? These are people with comorbidities, maybe elderly comorbidity people.
In one university.
In one university.
Okay.
Can you imagine that student union?
No.
Comorbidity university where you, maybe I could understand it then, but even then, like forcing people to do something with their bodies, I still can't stand behind. So, I want you to listen to a couple of doctors who had some thoughts about this on mandating vaccines for universities. Take a listen.
Dr. Hemeti, there are still some schools that are forcing students to get the COVID vaccine, like Harvard University. The website states that in order to register for spring term, students have to be compliant with all vax requirements. This includes the annual flu shot, as well as the bivalent Omicron-specific COVID-19 booster. Again, Dr. Hemeti, I mean, this is forcing a shot on students that are completely healthy and have an infinitesimally small chance of dying from this virus. Don't understand this, considering you can spread it with the vaccine anyway, right? I mean, you can spread the virus even if you're vaccinated.
Exactly, Laura, and that's the problem, is when the vaccines first came out, we were told repeatedly by the drug companies, by the White House, by so many others, that this will prevent you from getting infected and spreading it. We know that is no longer true. It was never true, but now, after so many months and years of experience now, we know that's absolutely false. So what is the purpose of forcing people who are perfectly healthy, who are in some of the lowest risk strata, to take something which we know also could have side effects. Every medical decision is a risk-benefit ratio, and when you have minimal to zero benefit, but you have some risk, no matter how much that is, that risk-benefit ratio may not work out. And so it's frankly, I think, unethical because it's coercive, and you're forcing people to take something that puts them at risk with minimal benefit, not only to themselves, but even to the people around them, given what we now know about the vaccines. On top of that, we have, as Dr. McCary was just pointing out, very little data, especially regarding this bivalent Omicron booster shot. We have antibody production data. We don't have data on anything related to mortality, long COVID, serious infections or hospitalizations. And for children, we have actually zero data. They're just referencing adult data with that.
Oh, so zero data. So, but you remember the head of the CDC in the fall, she's like, you know, but our recommendation when she was asked about this, we played that sound on our show. What's your recommendation? Well, our recommendation going into the fall is just everyone get the booster. Just get it. Don't even ask questions. Just get it. That's what she said. So here are the colleges still requiring the COVID booster shots. And what's interesting is these schools are now like pivoting to require the booster shots. So not even just the straight up, they're just pivoting to the booster shot. So here are all, see if your state pops up here. Okay, Alabama, nothing. Alaska, nothing. Arizona, nothing. Indiana, you got DePaul University, St. Mary's, Holy Cross, University of Notre Dame, Valparaiso. California, look at California. Holy smokes. All of these California universities and colleges. The list is pretty endless there. Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Bates College, Colby College in Maine, Maryland, Johns Hopkins. Oh, man. Massachusetts, Amherst College, Bentley College, Bay Path, Colorado, Fort Lewis, University of Colorado at Boulder, University of Denver, Connecticut. I mean, the list is endless. Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, nothing.
Because in Florida, the Surgeon General has said that he does not recommend it for all populations, and especially not the mRNA for
kids.
For college-aged men.
Yeah. So Florida, there you go. Arizona also not on this list. Hawaii, Michigan, Idaho not on this list. Illinois, Minnesota. This is really, I mean, and that was just up through, now we can go N through Z. Oregon, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. Look at all these. Bucknell, Cabrini, Carnegie Mellon University, Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine.
I mean, when most workplaces have now dropped a vaccine mandate, why on a population of mostly healthy young people
would this
continue to be in place?
Great question.
Especially when you have the choice to vaccinate yourself if you want to. Why do you care about your neighbor being vaccinated or not, or your coworker or your classmate?
Well, Biden's COVID czar, his name is Ashish Jha, this afternoon, he said that he thinks this is God's will for all of us to get the COVID shot. It's God's will. That's why you were given these two arms. Listen.
I really believe this is why God gave us two arms, one for the flu shot and the other one for the COVID shot.
Okay.
And there
you
saw. Yeah, that's why you got two arms.
Where's faith in that scenario?
No.
Like, you're supposed to just have faith and not have to take anything.
And this is also why God gave us the biopharmaceutical complex.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you notice Dr. Fauci was in that video? He was in the upper left-hand quadrant of that video. So today was his last White House briefing. And the guy went on, he dropped a bomb. He went out on a high note. I was like, wait a second. Is this old? Like this press conference? No. This is today. This is him today saying this about getting boosted and getting the vaccine. Dr. Fauci, watch.
Vaccinated and unboosted versus vaccinated plus boosted. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get boosted, but the real danger is in the people who have not been vaccinated. So that's where we expect, if we're going to see a problem this winter, it's going to
be among those people.
Okay.
Goodbye, Fauci. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
Those people. Didn't they get on Trump about that by saying things like that? Like, isn't that basically inciting violence, kind of?
Yeah, those people.
Establish that?
On both sides. Those people on both sides. Those people.
They're going to really have a problem. Okay.
So we have, last week the Senate voted 62-36 to end the emergency declaration although Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer claims that his vote was falsely recorded as an aye. And then they fixed that. The declaration of a public health emergency has been used, of course, as a rationale through a lot of this to suspend the rule of law for nearly 3 years. The Biden administration then, of course, referring to the state of emergency as a pretext for suspending student loan payments, right? As well as unconstitutional rent moratoriums, a whole host of things, asking for $10 billion additional in COVID response. And then he's threatened to veto any new congressional efforts to end this national emergency, according to a statement from the Office of Management and Budget. So he's going to veto anything. So if Republicans now in control of the House try to pull something, he's going to veto it.
So then keep us in perpetual emergency.
Yeah. I mean, that's at least through the spring, at least. I mean, that's where we are right now. And maybe he'll extend it again. He's going to keep going with this because it's certainly cover for the biopharmaceutical complex.
Sure.
So why not?
I'm waiting
it?
For the lights to come out, the security level lights.
Oh, they have like what? Where do they have that in New Zealand? Right.
Orange.
Red alert.
Or is that in Australia? Australia has the traffic lights.
Well, the CDC does do a sort of green, orange, red for certain communities, and you can search your community. They already do have something like that. It's not really used in the
news.
They
could just like double up on Smokey the Bear. They could say fire, chances high today.
Yeah.
And COVID green.
Bubba Smith says he had this done in our chat, in our Rumble chat, and says he had a heart attack a few days later, then a blood clot in his leg, Bubba says. Bubba, I hope you're okay. That's awful. Dr. Rima Libo is a doctor, and she says that this is all about the immunization agenda 2030 from the United Nations and the World Health Organization. This is Dr. Rima, and she says the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Health Organization, all part of this, and it's printed right on there implementing the immunization agenda 2030 by adding these additional round of vaccines. Listen to what she has to say about that.
Immunization Agenda 2030 impact goal indicators and targets lays out that by 2030, there will be 500 new vaccines introduced. And under the Immunization Agenda 2030, which is part of One Health, no man, woman, or child will have an exemption. Well, of course, the elite will have an exemption because they wouldn't do this to their bodies. But you and I, those of us who survive to that point, will be forcibly jabbed. No one left behind is how they put it, which really means no one left alone.
So that's the implementation, implementing the immunization agenda 2030. You can read all about it right on the World Health Organization's website.
I mean, we've already seen that happen in New York City when the garbage collectors sued the city for vaccine mandates and showed that there was an exemption in the city for entertainers and artists. They did not have to get vaccinated or follow vaccine mandates, but trash collectors, sanitation workers who had so little interaction with the public were forced to take this or else lose their job. They won that litigation, but there's still an appeal to get their jobs back. But she's right. The elite will not be subjected to this. It's just sort of the normal idiots like us.
Brad Wildman in our chat says it's divine vaccination.
Okay.
Yeah, divine vaccination. The God wanted you to have two arms for a flu shot and for a COVID shot. So if anyone has an idea as to why these colleges, I mean, and I thought it was just going to be a few. As I started going through the data, I thought, oh, maybe it's just going to be Harvard where this kind of story. No. Hundreds upon hundreds of universities and colleges across the United States sticking to this mandate.
Yeah.
Really, really troubling.
That's shocking in this day and age.
Yeah, really troubling. All right, we've got more news to get to on this old Tuesday. We're going to talk about Sweden could be vindicated over how it handled things during the lockdowns compared to what's going on in the United Kingdom. We'll show you that. Plus, we're going to talk about a little World Cup, wokeism, and all of that. But first, on this show, we're constantly trying to better understand the world around us. It's a crazy time. We love to read. We love to understand. And knowledge and understanding are more important than ever. That's why I've been a Blinkist user for 2 years now. I started during the pandemic, really exploring what Blinkist had to offer. So what is Blinkist? It's an amazing app that allows you to understand the most important pieces of information from thousands of nonfiction books and podcasts in just 15 minutes. Blinkist is not about learning, it's about understanding. And I love that mission. So it's not just like rote memorization of anything. It's about understanding. You can try it for free for 7 days and get 25% off their premium membership when you go to Blinkist.com/redacted. So let me give you an example. I've really been working on getting more done, trying to be more organized in my life. This has been my great mission. It's something I've focused on. Well, this weekend, I went to my Blinkist app and I downloaded the 5 a.m. Club, which is a Blink, and I read it in just 15 minutes. It's a really fascinating Blink about how to structure my day better. Getting up early in the morning, mapping out my to-do items for the day, doing some morning prayers, meditation. So this 5 a.m. club helped me understand the mental and physical benefits of this practice. Blinkist also has great audio versions as well. So if you absorb this great content in text or audio format, you can do it either way, however you like. Blinkist has a new feature called the Blinkist Connect, which lets you share your premium plan with a friend or a loved one as well. So two different accounts can share the benefits at no additional cost. And all you need to do is make sure the app is updated to the latest version, tap the Connect button, and share your free invitation to a friend or a loved one so you can share and recommend different titles. It's really, really great. So again, try it for free right now. It might click for you, and you get to try it for 7 days to see if it's something that you would want in your life. I absolutely love it. You get 25% off a premium membership when you go to Blinkist.com/redacted, Blinkist.com/redacted. So our thanks to them. I like that knowledge-based companies want to support our show.
Yes.
That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Seeking the truth here on the show. That's what we do.
All right. Remember when the Western media loved to poke fun at Sweden for refusing lockdowns, and then furthermore poke fun at Fox News for loving Sweden for lockdowns? You remember this, right? Sweden was like the kick me sign of the pandemic. Right. Well, now the country may be able to say, I told you so. Not that Sweden is gloating. They're not. But the lead epidemiologist there, it was sort of like their surgeon general, said that it would take years to know if these non-lockdown policies actually paid off. But it seems that this year we have some data showing that it is, especially when you consider that countries with strict lockdowns, such as the UK, are experiencing such negative data. So we're going to compare. Now, the UK is experiencing a surge we've been talking about in excess deaths since the pandemic, but they also are having a surge in cancer death. According to the Telegraph, charities and health experts are calling for the government to act, warning that misdiagnoses during lockdown may be a factor, and that the problem is being compounded by the current NHS crisis. Since the beginning of September, there have been nearly 900 more deaths in people with cancer than would be expected at this time of the year. The most recent breakdown of causes of death from the Office for Health Improvement and Disparities show there were nearly 230 extra deaths in the worst week, that week alone, of people dying from cancers that either were misdiagnosed or not diagnosed. Early diagnosis, they say, can improve your chances by up to 30% of, depending on where you land on the stage 1 through 4. Now, the health secretary is defending the National Health Services and saying, yeah, you know, it's bad, but we're kind of doing what we can. We expected this. He really has a pitiful response when pushed on it on this. Listen.
You use the word challenge a lot. I want to show our viewers what challenge really means. We can look at this graph. You might want to look at it as well. The number of patients who have to wait over 12 hours before getting onto a ward when they arrive at A&E. Look at that spike.
And in a way, Laura,
that's not
makes
a challenge. That's a disaster, isn't it?
That makes my exact point. You can see the extent to which that has risen exponentially since the pandemic. So the point is, the point I was making was in terms of where, from the Labour Party, you hear this being a 12-year issue, you can see there's been a very material impact from the pandemic. And it's in that context that we've taken the difficult decision on social care, whilst we remain committed to those reforms, to delay them for 2 years, which frees up the £6.6 billion investment into our NHS, but also the £2.8 and £4.7 billion that goes into
care. But can you look at that as Health Secretary and tell our viewers this morning that this system is working?
Well, that's why we're put with the very difficult...
My question, can you tell people that the NHS
the reason
is working
it is
right
under,
now?
I recognise, Laura, that it is under severe pressure, and that graph illustrates that. That is why, despite the very real challenges in the autumn statement that the Chancellor faced, he prioritised funding for health, an extra £6.6 billion over the next 2 years.
But it's less than they asked for. It's less than they say they need.
Well, the chief executive of the NHS was clear this gives the NHS the funding that it needs. But we have also, alongside that, recognised that simply focusing on the NHS without also focusing on care will not actually address the issue of delayed discharge.
Which is why some people wonder why you're delaying the reform, but we've talked about that.
Now, I just want to show a little empathy here, because if you've ever gone to the doctor and had them say anything scary at all, and say, oh, we want to test you for this, and then you cannot get an appointment to follow up to verify whether or not you have this, or your child has this, or, I mean, I've been through that kind of thing with my kid where they're like, this might be this, let's get it tested. And then you agonize. This is agony to not be able to get information about your own health. Take a look at this. There's 7 million people on the NHS waiting list in England as of October, and they say that's just going to get worse into 2025. It says new data from the NHS England show that the number waiting to start routine hospital treatments at the end of August was up 6.8 million in July, the highest number since records began in August of 2027. Now look down a little further, some 461,400 patients, 30.5% of the total, were waiting longer than 6 weeks for one of 15 standard tests in August, including an MRI scan, ultrasound, and gastroscopy. Again, if you can just feel for those people who are thinking, oh my gosh, I might have something. I can't get an answer to even get an appointment for 6 weeks. What that feels like, what the agony is of going on with your life with that uncertainty. And they say this is just going to get worse. Now, when we do compare this to Sweden, though, which did not do what they called lockdown experiments, the numbers are hard to argue with. This is Anders Tegnell. He is the Swedish state, like their sort of surgeon general, said that he could not recommend lockdowns given he didn't know if they worked. That was his official policy. He said they'd never been proven, so he didn't want to risk it. In hindsight, that is really logical.
Yeah.
They weren't proven. How did we know that that was going to work? Why did we all agree to that? And I'm going to see in the chat many people saying, I didn't, but I get you. Now, this radical approach actually cost him a job with the World Health Organization. In April, the Swedish Public Health Agency announced that Tegnell would leave his job and join WHO as a senior expert working with vaccine distribution. But then after he left, the WHO kind of played this dirty joke on him and said, sorry, we never could come to an agreement on his contract. He doesn't really have a job here. So that's interesting, right? He's this sort of pioneer in anti-lockdowns, thinks he's being moved on up to the WHO, and then they kind of pull the rug out from under him. I did not have time to look further into this story today, but I'm interested in it. If anybody knows something extra, wants to point me in any direction, I'm all eyes. Now, about those Swedish statistics, the Telegraph reports that in Sweden, in February, when they abolished all domestic COVID restrictions, Sweden emerged with one of Europe's lower COVID death tolls. The rate is 1,614 per million people, just over half that of Britain. Given that British death tolls were comparable at first to Sweden, it's hard to argue that there's some demographic force, which meant COVID was not going to spread the same in Sweden. Again, now we see Finland, though, coming back around on those COVID death numbers and saying we attributed a lot of deaths to COVID when they were deaths with COVID. We may or may not see Sweden do that because Sweden was included in some of that analysis from the Finnish government. So we're going to have to wait on that. Now let's look about at cancers, or I'm sorry, at economic growth, rather. When you compare Sweden, their GDP fell by 2.9% in 2020, while Britain's collapsed by 9.4%. Both have bounced back. Again, this is written in February, though, before we had this hell of a year that we've all somehow survived. Now, though, in February, they were estimating that Sweden's economy would be 5% larger than before the pandemic, so got back to a growth pattern versus 2% for Germany. The UK will be about 1%, one of the lowest figures in Europe. Again, these are February numbers. I think those are increasingly optimistic, but data usually relates increase in GDP to increase in health for all manner of reasons. When GDP raises, individual people see an increase in income and are able to buy themselves a healthier lifestyle, whether that be replacing indoor cooking, you know, facilities or eating better or what have you. These are all very preliminary measures, but ones we absolutely should keep in mind if and when we are ever asked to make sacrifices during a lockdown again.
Someone says, Dynastropes in the chat says, the reason the Swedes didn't lock down is because the Swedish constitution, but the Swedish government changed that a few weeks ago. I didn't hear that part.
Yes, I am interested in that. Send that to us.
Also, the people wondering, like, well, I was wondering why Sweden didn't take a victory lap in this. Like, hey, and apparently that's part of their law, too. But it's a cultural law. The law of Jantelagen, the law of Jantelagen, where Swedes don't show off.
Okay. It's a Swedish virtue.
Why did my laptop stop working? It's a Swedish virtue. Swedish Jantelagen, law of Jante, why Swedes don't show off is. So it's a little custom. And it's basically called Jantelagen, the law of Jante, because it says that you're not better than anybody else. So if you do something extraordinary, they are less prone to bragging in Sweden. I love that. Don't show off. You got a new car? Don't show off. Got a new house?
Socialist.
Don't show off. You have a number of record sales, fancy furniture? Don't show it off. Just don't show it off.
Okay. I'm all for that.
I love that. Do you see my new glasses?
They're not new.
I'm just showing off.
Oh, okay.
I'm not Swedish.
All right. Well, let us know what you think in the chat. This sort of cultural difference between COVID lockdown approaches and how we will all be better or worse because of it.
I am going to show off something here before we move on. I'm going to show you, and I want you all to call. So they wouldn't do this in Sweden, but I want you all to start calling me Lord. So we have a number of lords and ladies who have now got their proclamation of land from Established Titles. They have a huge Black Friday sale going on right now at Established Titles using the code REDACTED10 at checkout. Established Titles is a project based in the historic Scottish custom where landowners are referred to as lords and ladies when you buy as little as 1 square foot of dedicated land. And when you get a proclamation in the mail, you can actually technically change your name. You can change it on your driver's license. You can actually get your name changed with Lord put in the front of it. Hey, shouldn't just be reserved for people like Sir Paul McCartney. You can be Lord Clayton Morris, and that's what I'm going to be. So now technically that is my name. Established Titles will actually... So a viewer last night wrote to me and said, do they plant a tree in the square foot of land that you buy with Established Titles for $40 or $50? And the answer is no, they don't. They plant it with a charity separately in another location. So they work with global charities like One Tree Planted and Trees for the Future. So when you go and visit your land on your proclamation, yeah, you'll see your own land, but there's not going to be a tree planted there by them. It'll be in another location. It's a great last-minute gift because the declaration will show up in the mail with your name on it as either Lord or Lady of this plot of land, and you can get it framed. What's even better is that you can actually change your name, and that's what I love about it. You can buy an Established Titles plot of land, and it'll be right next to ours, so we are building a redacted rebel's kingdom inside of Scotland. And I've heard from dozens of you that have already bought your plot of land, so we're planning on getting together. My goal is in July, we're going to be in Scotland. We're going to go to the location, and I'm hoping we can coordinate a Redacted Rebels cookout or something on our land together. It'll be so much fun. We'll film some videos. We'll have some fun.
You know what we should do?
What's that?
We should build little hobbit homes on all of them with little picket fences, like models, and have a whole little like a little towns.
I'm sleeping in
Zoolander.
Yeah.
How are the kids gonna get in the building?
It makes an amazing last-minute gift. Established Titles is running a massive sale right now for the holiday season. If you use the code REDACTED10, you get an additional 10% off. Go to establishedtitles.com/redacted10 to get your gifts now and support this channel. So they support us. If you want to get a little last-minute gift, you can do it. PC Mac says, please do it. A grill. We should set up a grill on every plot. Like, we'll have like a tailgate. So everyone, we'll just have a grill on each plot of land for all of the redacted army, the redacted rebellion. We'll be there in Scotland. Freedom! Okay. Can't take away my freedom.
Okay.
Freedom!
All right. Good plan.
If you subscribe to the channel, your name will pop right up here on the big screen. And please do that by going to... You can also support our channel. We have a daily newsletter by going to redacted.inc, not .com, redacted.inc.
Somebody asked, if you're non-binary, what title do you get? Lord or lady? Is there a cis title or non-cis title?
I really don't know.
Like we were talking to someone who was it? Where did they go? The Nordic last names that are like Odin son or Odin daughter, like,
right.
Do those change for non-binary people? I wonder what the conversation, I mean, I only know the conversation around English language. So if you know the answer to that, let us know. I am interested. Maybe it's like Odin child. That's Odin child. Odin child.
Odin son.
Odin offspring. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Is the World Cup a place to show your politics? That is the question, because it is 2022 and we have a major sporting competition. And in this day and age, everything has to be a woke fight. So is World Cup the place for it? Some players thought it was and have decided, actually, never mind. So here are a list of some of the activist moves that were going to happen and now probably won't happen. The background for this is that Qatar, the host country, is a Muslim country, so they observe Sharia law. And in Sharia law, homosexuality is forbidden and illegal, punishable even with jail time. Some European teams had threatened to wear rainbow armbands in the tournament to protest these religious laws. Particularly, the rainbow bands were meant to protest the fact that homosexuality is illegal in this place. Apparently, those players have walked it back. What's the soccer equivalent of that? Like, traveled? I don't know. I'm not a...
Offsides? Backpedaled? There's nothing for going backwards.
Okay.
Handball?
I don't know. So they changed their minds. You know why? They don't want a yellow card. Because FIFA has said that anyone who does something like this, that disrespects the whole host country, will get a yellow card before they even take the field. And, you know, if you get two yellow cards, you're kicked out of the game. So no player wants to start the game with this disadvantage, with automatically already one yellow card, which I guess begs the question. Some people think that some things are worth taking a penalty for in order to show your politics, but do you work your whole life to get to an athletic event only to be kicked off for a fight that's not yours? Or is it yours, right? And so I think these are big, interesting questions. Likewise, the U.S. men's team did not display any signs of activists when they originally had rumblings that they were going to show up with a rainbow crest on their uniform, the center chest piece that looks like this. The one with the red, white, and blue is obviously the official USA colors, but someone decided to maybe put some rainbows in, but they didn't. Instead, they showed up for the match wearing their nation's official flag colors. Iran, on the other hand, did display activism. The team did not sing their country's national anthem to express solidarity with the protesters that have been protesting the death of Mahsa Amini in Iran. We've talked about these protests before. They have been protesting their own government for nearly 2 months. Here is an image of them not singing during the national anthem. Now, I think this is a conundrum for fans, really, because fans are going there to support their country and their culture and ultimately their nation. So they're showing up representing what? A nation and a culture that they do not support, or they can parse out one from the next. It's really tough. It underlines how conflicting this can be, because, you know, sport can be such a unifying force, but in an age where we just can't leave anything alone without politicizing it, we can see how it can also be very culturally destructive. And, you know, so we all have to ask ourselves, is football or soccer the way to prove a point? Does it really, does it help? Is something that I think, does it help gay people in Qatar that Westerners are sort of provoking the local government? Because the local government is not going to cave, you know, and the local government has said that homosexuals are welcomed here as travelers. Citizens still cannot be homosexuals, but does it make it worse or better for them? Do you know that as an outsider? Is it respectful to do this? Should you speak for other people? Or is this a sign that cultural divisions create more divisions, and that maybe, you know, this sporting unifying event is no longer a sporting unifying event? The Iranians were not penalized by FIFA for this anthem move, but rainbow banners and other protests will still not be allowed. And again, FIFA says that anyone who pulls a stunt like this will receive on-field penalties. And this is a language that the players understand. They do not want that. One other reason that everyone is so fired up about politics is FIFA president Gianni Infantino spoke out about disrespect for the host country on Saturday night in an emotional tirade, and he accused those who were speaking out against local laws of moral lesson giving and hypocrisy. Like, who is anyone to do this, right? Just because you've qualified to play in a tournament. And he also spoke about the government's decision to reverse its stance on beer sales. Originally, they were going to allow beer sales in the stadium when, for the most part, they do not allow that in that country because they don't allow alcoholic beverages. And Budweiser was really left holding the beer, right? Because yeah. They reversed stance on this because of pressure from local government saying, we can't have this. And Infantino, the FIFA president, said, I think personally, if for 3 hours a day you cannot drink a beer, you will survive. I would just like to point out that not drinking beer makes you more likely to survive. So he is actually 100% correct.
That's very woke of you, though. I wouldn't say that.
Is it?
No, I don't know.
I think woke culture actually actively hides the pathology that results from drinking. I think woke culture wants nothing to do with breaking that down.
No,
at all. I mean, they protect beer sales and alcohol sales and all of the data that goes shows that alcohol is not just a disease of the addict, but actually bad for everybody. No, woke people do not want to look at that at all.
No. They wouldn't have had Erin Andrews the other day. She was doing a segment she was sitting in front of Crown Royal. She had a glass of Crown Royal. And it was like, Crown Royal is giving away like food bag. What, I forget. Does anyone know, maybe anyone who saw this advertisement? Oh, it was an NFL game. Crown, and they're promoting, when did they lift the ban on hard alcohol on television? Remember that was, you were not allowed to see that on television for many, many years. It was only in print ads, and then suddenly that's back now. Anyway, she was there holding a glass of Crown Royal, talking about Crown Royal is giving away these little purple bags of food to people.
Oh, yes,
need.
That's right. I saw that too.
And then she's holding a Crown Royal. She's Crown Royal is giving back. And I'm like, well, it's a great message. It's a great message we're sending there for everyone too.
Right. No, I mean, there's nothing there for woke or leftists to go after alcohol because they want it for themselves. They would never do anything that hurts themselves. Like Vivek Ramaswamy talks about in his book about summer vacations, that disadvantages poor and children of color. But, you know, wealthy, woke people who take ski trips to Breckenridge are absolutely not going to advocate for anything that would, you know, preclude their ability to do that.
So if you come from the Vivek Ramaswamy school of thought, it's okay, I'm watching a FIFA game. So let's just watch the game. I don't need your politics, you know, just in the same way. If I go to a movie, I don't need to know Brad Pitt's politics. Just I want to.
Well, because we are allowing people who are privileged, famous, wealthy to put their politics above people who are not.
Right.
Because they have a world stage, so they are going to promote something.
Like, I'm glad you took the knee. I'm glad you wore a wristband. Like, what is that doing?
Yeah.
What is that doing other than virtue signaling? I think a lot of it's virtue signaling. I don't know. And I don't know what it really does for the people of Qatar at all. Like, if you're thinking you're helping, you know, gay people in Qatar, in fact, it may actually hurt them, may actually be more detrimental because, you know, you're out there walking around doing the stuff that, you know, the country doesn't allow.
Well, it's not necessarily people who are doing homosexuality, but promoting it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or just like flaunting it in, you know, just to show off or just to say, hey, we're here in your country. We're going to do something that's not openly accepted in your culture. So we're going to do it to flaunt your local laws.
As Westerners. Yeah.
Like we like to do. And then when that's all done, when the World Cup is done, and then the people of Qatar go back to living their lives, and then certain people try to go out and try to do something similar like that, and they get in trouble, or they get hurt because
of
it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Do you empower somebody to then do something that will get them hurt? Because the law is not changed in this moment, and your armband is not going to make that. It's only showing the rest of the world, I came here to play, even though I don't agree with this culture, but I wanted to play so bad. But I'll put a band on to show you that I understand that you know, I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We're done. So,
and we do want to thank you all for subscribing. We have a daily newsletter. If you go to redacted.inc, you might not be able to see the website, but just pretend that you see a website right now. Redacted.inc is the place to go and to sign up for the daily newsletter. When you put in your email address, you'll receive a welcome email, and then you'll get it first thing in the morning. So you got to confirm that email. Just put in your email, click submit, and then tomorrow morning you'll receive the world's best newsletter. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you smile, it might make you cry. You can read it in about 5 to 10 minutes over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning. And you got to click that verify button to make sure you want to get the email. And then you'll receive the email tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning. Redacted.inc, not .com, is the place to go.